everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Board of Public Works. I walked in the door. I just got back from a wonderful event at Annapolis High School, where I had the honor of being there with Michael Milken. We presented the Milken National Educator Award to a woman named Allison Felton, who's an outstanding math teacher at Annapolis High, and she won the national award and $25,000, and it was a big, exciting thing to recognize teachers who do such a great job every day, and wonderful out of 3 million teachers in the country that we got this award right here in Annapolis. So we're very proud of her and Annapolis High and the great work that our school systems do. Also, just let me say that last weekend's federal government shutdown negatively affected countless Marylanders and their families, and thankfully it only lasted a few days, but it was reckless and irresponsible, and the current continuing resolution will again expire in less than 3 weeks, potentially putting us right back in the same position where we are. Maryland is probably more impacted than any other state in the nation, and I just want to be clear, this type of behavior is simply unacceptable. I think Marylanders are sick and tired of the dysfunction in Washington, and everyone in Washington, Democrats and Republicans, need to stop the finger pointing, sit down and work together and do their jobs, which is what we do here in Annapolis every single day. With that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues for any opening remarks, and I think we'll start with the Treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. I certainly do echo your remark about the disheartening events in Washington. And on the other hand, hope everyone stands strong for all our citizens, including the Dreamers, who play a very important part in Maryland, in our economy, in our society, and in our educational system. And if I were they, I would keep the pressure on everybody to act decently. One very good thing happened last week, Governor, and I want to just personally congratulate you as a member of the Maryland Commission on Climate Change. The Governor led Maryland back onto the U.S. Climate Alliance. We're still in again, and I think that to that leadership, including the leadership of your cabinet, Secretary Belton, Secretary Grumbles, the Departments of Health, Transportation, Agriculture, everybody together, is great news. And the people of the state should be aware and very appreciative. It's one thing for the Treasurer's Office to have signed on last year and for probably the Comptroller, but for the state government, the man speaking for the state, I think it's great. Your commission just made a report for finishing up 2017, but the 2018 report is the one coming up in the next year that's going to be very significant, where we are going to attest to the progress we've made in Maryland, mitigating our climate change impact and laying out how we're going to help the state adapt to those changes, which we will not be able to avoid. And so in that context, I was particularly pleased to see on this agenda we have some programs in school construction, all of which will be LEED Silver at least, and some LEED A. We have more projects in geothermal energy in the school. We have a very interesting project in the transportation department, capture and reuse of energy. DHCD, the housing department, is going forward with funds from both the public and private sector in energy conservation and insulation. I think Maryland has always been a leader in this area, continues to be a leader in this area, and it's a great way to start a new year.
Well, thank you very much. I'll just respond to that quickly before we turn it over to the Comptroller. We've together really been focused on clean air and And we're leading the nation and the world in this respect with the legislation that we've instituted and the policies that we've put in place for the last 3 years. We're stronger than 47 other states, and our policies here in Maryland are twice as strong as the Paris Accord recommendations. So we joined this group not to cut our standards in half or to go back to the level of where they are, but to try to set an example for other states and other countries about how you can protect the environment while also growing the economy and growing jobs. So we're looking
and
forward to that.
And not drilling off of our Atlantic coast.
Well, that's another one we're focused on. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and Madam Treasurer, and thank both of you for your leadership on the climate issue. I'm just busy myself with taxes right now. And with less than 1 week from to the start of this year's tax processing season, I'm proud to report that thanks to the hard work of our 1,200 agency employees, we are ready to once again provide first-class taxpayer service that will allow us to process millions of Maryland tax returns in a timely fashion, accurately, and efficiently. In 2017, we processed 3.1 million returns, with the vast majority of Marylanders taking advantage of our convenient, secure, and free e-filing system, allowing us to process returns expeditiously and process Maryland's hard-earned refunds. Almost $2 billion in refunds will go out over the next month to Maryland families. On average, 2.1 business days from receipt of a Maryland taxpayer's tax return and putting their money back in their bank account. God bless technology and, well, the staff that implement it, because it's a very complicated, sensitive task, and I'm delighted that the early indications are that we are, knock on wood, going to have a glitch-free refund season. But believe it or not, we still receive nearly 500,000 paper tax returns. We continue to work diligently to process those returns, but you can understand why that takes more time in getting refunds to people. My office will continue to be laser-focused on protecting Marylanders from tax fraud. In 2017 alone, we blocked more than 10,000 fraudulent returns, prevented $16 million of fraudulent refunds being sent to financial thieves. I want to once again thank the General Assembly, Madam Treasurer, for unanimously passing the Taxpayer Protection Act, and to you, Governor Hogan, for your support and for enacting this critical piece of legislation last year. As always, Governor, I want to thank my hardworking staff for their continued commitment to provide respectful, responsive, and results-oriented service. I look forward to another successful tax season this year. Now, Governor and Treasurer and members of the audience, if I could just take a moment and introduce a special guest who is with us today. Mackenzie Greenwood is the 2017 recipient of the William Donald Schaefer Helping People Award for Carroll County. This compassionate, smart, and industrious young lady represents Maryland's finest. Mackenzie was awarded this very prestigious award that we give out around the state. She was inspired to help people in her hometown of Hempstead. She came up with the idea of something called the Little Food Pantry, so that individuals who are struggling to afford daily meals and food could anonymously and privately access food donated by others. Several times a week, she stops by the pantry. Those of you in your communities may have some of these little libraries set up where books are exchanged between citizens for free. It's all in the honor system, and it's, yeah, that's what the little pantry is. But it's food, not books. So several times a week, Mackenzie stops by the pantry to ensure it is well-stocked and organized. We're incredibly blessed to have young people like Mackenzie Greenwood working so diligently and with no desire for praise or recognition to help those in need. And I am personally inspired by Mackenzie Greenwood. She's here with her family. And I wonder, Mackenzie, could you stand up and let everyone give you a round of applause?
Mackenzie, welcome to Annapolis. We couldn't be more proud of you, and we're very excited. We truly appreciate the tremendous job that you have done to help folks in your community. And we'd like to present you not only with this award, but with a governor's citation to recognize your outstanding efforts. So we'd be delighted to have you and your family come up for a photo. And I see that Senator Reedy and Delegate Shoemaker are here from your area, if we could all come up. Let's give her another big round of applause.
Senator, maybe come over here.
Can you just jump over the table there?
I can't really go in anymore.
You're skinny now. You don't have
it.
Don't hide your face.
That's cute. Is there a camera? Perfect. Thank you very much, folks.
Well, now we're going to move on to the Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, we have 20 items on the Secretary's agenda. There are 5 emergency reports. We have everybody here prepared to answer your questions.
I think we ought to bring up item 18, please.
Item 18, sure, is Dr. Grell is here. This is the preliminary capital improvement program for the public school construction program. Dr. Grell can explain the program, and I do know that there is one county who has to be heard today.
Morning, Dr. Grell.
Thank you. Not a doctor. Bob Gorrell. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to call you a doctor. I'm promoting you. I'll give you an honorary doctorate today.
Thank you, Governor.
I have 2 of those, and I expect people to call me Dr. Doctor. today, the Board of Public Works will be considering a request from the Interagency Committee on School Construction to approve the preliminary FY 2019 public school construction budget, which I believe totals $222 million. Last week, our administration submitted our FY 2019 budget, which will provide $365 million for school construction funding. It's the largest in more than a decade. In total, our administration has invested $1.4 billion in school construction. On the operating side, our FY19 budget will invest $6.5 billion in K-12 education. This is an increase above and beyond the legislative funding formulas. And our budget ensures that every single school jurisdiction will receive more money this year than they did in the previous year. 70% of our capital budget goes to education. They say that budgets are a reflection of your priorities. And in 3 years, our administration has invested more than $2.85 billion in K-12 education just in Baltimore City. That's more than at any time in history. Last year, our state investment into the Baltimore City school system was 3.5 times more than the average jurisdiction. In fiscal year 2018, Baltimore City received more than $12,000 per student in financial aid from the state. That is nearly double the average for other jurisdictions in the state. And Baltimore City schools funding is the 4th highest in America per pupil. The budget This budget and our past budgets are a clear indication of our top priority, which is to provide the highest quality education to every single child in Maryland, regardless of what neighborhood they happen to grow up in. Now, the comptroller and I have been pushing for Baltimore City and Baltimore County to address these HVAC issues for years, long before the current crisis, where the schools in Baltimore City were subjected, the students there were subjected to frigid temperatures and classrooms that weren't heated. Everyone, everywhere, agrees that this is unacceptable to have thousands of children sweltering in summer or freezing in winter. It's just unacceptable. And despite the huge increases in state budgeting and funding, budget data from the city schools system shows that they're slashing spending on maintenance by 27%. And a recent report by the Baltimore Sun detailed how the city schools had to return $66 million in state funding for building repairs and maintenance, much of which was given to them specifically to fix these failing HVAC systems. These projects have been repeatedly prioritized, approved, and funded by this Board of Public Works, and yet the repairs have not been done by the city. Just recently, after this crisis, I provided $2.5 million in emergency funding from the state's catastrophic event account to give to the city schools to assist in these emergency repairs, these failing HVAC systems. We provided this funding not to reward the adults who have failed, but to literally save kids from freezing in the classrooms. Our focus has always been and always will be on the students and providing the fiscal oversight and the accountability needed to protect them and also to ensure that the taxpayers of the state of Maryland do not have their tax dollars misspent. So, Mr. Gorrell, in order to keep these problems from happening again, you know, we're looking forward to getting some answers today about how we got here and what can possibly be done to fix these seemingly management or structural problems. With that, I'll turn it over to the comptroller.
Thank you very much, Governor. And obviously the situation up in Baltimore during the cold weather was, well, it was inhumane. And I just want to say at the outset, because I know there's some people who will be once again condemning, of all places, the Board of Public Works for doing its job and holding school systems accountable, that today's discussion that the governor has cited, which is extremely important, is not about assigning blame or scoring political points. It's about figuring out how hundreds of kids in Baltimore City ended up freezing in frigid classrooms. It's about figuring out why $72.7 million in funding that was supposed to fix a lot of these heating issues at a number of schools in the city was reverted back to the state by the city school system. And it's about figuring out what we need to do moving forward to ensure that we fix these underlying problems. This is about identifying the critical issues that contributed to the city schools' failure to provide safe and healthy learning environment to students. I know some have suggested that this board's insistence that kids who live in the richest state, in the richest country in history, should have to be forced to learn either in sweltering classrooms or if we're taking care of that problem, that's to blame for the heating crisis when it's freezing during the winter. Such suggestions are nothing short of preposterous and, quite frankly, blatant hypocrisy on behalf of those making them. All children, regardless of their zip codes and socioeconomic status, are entitled to cool classrooms during the warmer months, which is not very far away, folks. I hate to be, the bearer of climate news, but the hot days are coming back. But anyway, those kids are entitled to cool classrooms during the warmer months and warm classrooms in the cooler months. Only in Annapolis do people think that students can't have both of those. Let's be clear. All Maryland students, regardless of jurisdiction, deserve to learn in temperature-controlled classrooms in schools that have clean, drinkable water and are free of mold and in structurally sound facilities. And as I've said over the last several years, the failure of some school systems to provide adequate, healthy, and safe learning environments for students has never been a matter of resources. It has never been a matter of money. It has been a matter of misguided priorities and bureaucratic inertia that have justifiably angered and frustrated parents, teachers, and students, and that forced students and teachers to learn and work in conditions that are simply unacceptable. As you noted in your remarks, Governor, city schools in Baltimore have received $540 million for school construction over the last 10 years and receives more school construction money per pupil than any other jurisdiction in the state. And yet, despite the undeniably significant state investment in Baltimore City School capital projects, only 17% of their facilities, think of this, 17% of the facilities that we have given all this money and that everyone has contributed to construction, only 17% of the facilities were rated as superior or good on the state measurement of are you taking care of the maintenance of these schools. 17% superior or good. In the next closest jurisdiction was 47%. That was just one. Most of the jurisdictions around the state were in the 70s, 80s. Howard County was 98%. 17% of the schools were properly maintained. And as everyone here knows, city schools' failure to properly take care of the facilities attracted national attention a few weeks ago when photos and videos of children wearing parkas in classrooms went viral, all of which amplified and brought to the surface just some of the effects of years of mismanagement that have occurred at North Avenue, which is the school headquarters up in Baltimore City. But these problems, specifically pertaining to heating and cooling, didn't just start this year all of a sudden. Kids in Baltimore City and the hardworking teachers and staff at these schools deserve better, which is why this board has consistently and will continue to exercise its oversight duties and responsibilities when it comes to ensuring that state investments and capital projects are producing the intended and desired outcomes. Now, Mr. Gorrell, if I could, I just have a couple of questions I'd like to ask. Given the overwhelming amount of conflicting information being shared and published on social media, newspapers, and news channels, it's hard to keep track of what's factual and what's not. Mr. Gorrell, the CEO of City Schools has identified partial funding of projects in their CIPs as one of the primary causes of the delays involving critical maintenance and capital improvements. In a December 7, 2017 letter you sent to Treasurer Kopp in her capacity as chair of the Knott Commission's funding subcommittee, you noted that, and I quote from your letter, city schools had historically taken such a long time to design and bid their projects that partial funding seemed prudent in order to maximize the use of the available CIP funds, end quote. That was a little over a month ago. Can you explain what the rationale was behind the IAC's decision to partially fund city schools' capital projects and why the IAC believed at the time that this, as you say, was a prudent action?
Yes, Comptroller, I can. The purpose of the program is to maximize the available dollars, as the governor has said, to all children. All children need to have sufficient educational space to learn. Without the space, learning does not happen. Those dollars, they had a number of stalled projects prior to that time. And I believe, I was not part of the IAC at the time, but I believe from all of the evidence that I've looked at that it was a prudent decision to apply money in several areas across and allow the LEA to allow Baltimore City to try to move a project up one or another. Whichever one moved fastest would be the one that the IAC could then participate in. I think from the IAC standpoint, we can get better at how that we allocate the money and support them to move certain projects forward. But none of those dollars that were awarded to those projects that later rescinded were lost. They were reapplied back to Baltimore City. As of the end of this year, Baltimore City had a zero balance of contingency dollars. They've all been rolled back into full projects, and Baltimore City asked that all of their projects be fully funded from this point forward, which the request was made, and it happened. And I've got to say that at the time they were partially funded, the request could have been made by the city to the IAC to fully fund and not partially fund, but apparently that didn't happen.
Yeah, I noticed in the exact letter I just quoted from that you said to Treasurer Kopp that the IAC was only recently contacted by city schools to express concerns about partial funding. I take it that's what you just cited there. Can you tell us how many systemic projects in city schools received partial funding since FY 2014 versus how many received full funding?
If you'll give me a minute, I can.
Thank you. You don't. That's okay. You can get it to us later if you want. And it's my understanding, as you just noted, that you have discontinued partial funding for local services. Okay. If I could, I'd like to discuss your assessment or your predecessor's assessment, Dr. Lieber, regarding mismanagement at city schools, Baltimore City Schools. In a letter you sent to Dr. Santalisi on December 12, 2017, this is just, you know, last month, both of these letters, you note that, quote, these reverted funds are not due to projects completed under budget, but rather to project management issues such as late project starts, lack of pre-qualification of contractors, and many projects with insufficient budgets due to defective estimates. Similarly, in a December 2015 report by the IAC to the legislative budget committees, which tasked the IAC with identifying areas of improvement to city schools, Baltimore operation, the IAC noted, quote, this is from your predecessor, quote, it has been a persistent concern of IAC staff that Baltimore City Schools has not managed its state-funded capital projects at the same level as other Maryland school systems, further stating that the majority of capital projects that we have observed in the field demonstrate the absence of comprehensive facility management practices, end quote. In the same December 2015 report to the General Assembly, Mr. Lieber's team outlined a series of recommendations that would significantly improve the management and execution of critical capital projects at city schools. This is over 2 years ago. In your assessment and that of your staff, has city schools made the appropriate and necessary changes to address the concerns identified that I just mentioned?
They have made some progress. They have improved. One example is a computerized maintenance management system now. It doesn't have all of their inventory loaded in so that they understand what parts need to be replaced when. But they're moving in the right direction. In a lot of the other areas, they still need help. I've got to say, as I've studied Baltimore City, their facilities are amongst the oldest average age in the state. Prince George's falls right behind them, so they have a heavy lift, which means that they have to be better at project and facility management than anybody else with the problem that they have faced them. So I believe that, in my opinion, there could be more local capital investment. I think that that is a limiting factor on their moving projects forward. And two, they do need to bolster their professional capabilities. They need to have leadership that's highly qualified and experienced in public school systems, large portfolio public school systems, like some of their peer systems around them. I think in the short term that they will be able then to accurately prioritize their dollars and they'll get more effective spending. The dollar will go further for every project that they move forward, and they can project manage that project to completion. In the long term, they also need that expertise so that they can control the size of their investment. They have more square footage than their peers by almost 50%. So they have more than they need, and they can't take care of it. They want to make sure they don't make that problem worse in the future, even with the current investments that we are providing today. So, yes, they do need stronger leadership.
No, and it's a big problem. They have about 2,000 classrooms right now that have no air conditioning, and, frankly,
the
boilers have failed also. So we're not talking about a small issue. I appreciate that. Let me just move forward. I've got a little bit more here. There are some, as I mentioned earlier, some people, particularly downstairs, have mentioned or suggested that this board's prioritization of putting air conditioning in Baltimore City schools was partially to blame for the heating crisis that the school system experienced. Rather bizarre contention, but I guess we have to take it seriously. It's a claim that's not only patently false, but is insulting to the members of this board who gave voice to the thousands of students, teachers, and parents whose pleas for immediate relief from sweltering conditions in dozens, hundreds of schools, frankly, back in 5 years ago. All of those complaints from the citizens fell on deaf ears from their elected officials and the school systems in Baltimore City and Baltimore County. Only two jurisdictions in the state where this problem exists. So let's not forget that it wasn't until last year, after 5 years of pounding the table, the Baltimore City Schools, to their credit, added window units to their capital improvement funding request. So there's absolutely no justification, nor is there any logical or factual basis to blame this board's prioritization of air conditioning installation for the heating challenges that Baltimore City Schools have faced for these many years. Its lack of maintenance, its lack of sound leadership, as you say, they're not even close to the other jurisdictions as far as having proper management of monies that they have received. So let me just share a few figures from the IAC regarding funding for critical HVAC projects that have been reverted by Baltimore City. Between 2014 and 2017, city schools reverted funds for 11 HVAC-related projects totaling $40.2 million because the contracts for these projects were not executed. This is while their kids are sweltering in classrooms during hot days that if we put our pets in those classrooms, we would be arrested for animal abuse. Additionally, I hate to get hot under the collar, so to speak. Additionally, two HVAC projects were reverted because these schools are projected to be closed by 2024. Two HVAC AC projects were reverted due to insufficient project scope. Two HVAC projects were reverted when the contract was awarded. And one HVAC project was reverted because the contract approved by the city's Board of School Commissioners was not executed in time. That's 18 heating and air conditioning projects that were reverted back to the state by city schools. Mr. Gorrell, do you share the argument made by some that air conditioning prioritization is the blame for schools with failed heating units?
Mr. Comptroller, members, I do not. The projects are brought to the IAC with the priorities of the local jurisdiction. So that's where they begin. So as those recommendations are brought before you, every jurisdiction has the opportunity to appeal them if there is some disagreement along the way to the IAC. And then if they don't like what the IAC has said, by regulation, they can come and appeal to you. So, no, it wasn't the IAC or the process that drove those projects that they are saying they wanted funding, or the reversion certainly is because of the lack of overall understanding of what their need was, funding, and the management to move them forward.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. I'd also like to note that several months ago, in October 2017, at the Begathon that we had, the governor we had back a couple of months ago. Dr. Santalesis, this is the CEO of the Baltimore City School System, informed this board that HVAC units that provide both cooling and supplemental heating were installed in 7 schools. And in fact, her exact words were, "I want you to know that 7 schools received air conditioning over this past summer." And I thought that was great. We were making some progress because those schools, their classrooms would not be sweltering or freezing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Gorell, but Baltimore City was supposed to install split systems which provide heat and cooling to these schools that Dr. Santalesis referenced. So I was shocked to see Lakewood Early Learning Center, one of the 7 schools that Dr. Santalesis indicated had split systems installed last summer, are among the schools closed for lack of heat. Mr. Gorell, has Baltimore City Schools provided reasoning as to why these 7 schools did not end up receiving split system installations, as Dr. Santalesis informed this board just 4 months ago?
I don't have that information today, but I will get it for you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gorell. And speaking of split systems. yes. I bought one. I brought one. I didn't buy it. I don't mean to sound like a salesman for these units, but I know for a fact that...
Today only. We have a special.
Today, I realized, I know for a fact that Caroline County School Systems and Anne Arundel County Public Schools have used split system units like this one in front of us to solve their heating, cooling, and ventilation programs, and it's been done in a very cost-effective, very timely fashion. These units have a lifespan of 15 years and cost around $6,000 each, and it's my understanding that the cost is reduced significantly when bought in bulk. Mr. Gorell is a longtime proponent, and I know you have been a champion, of climate-controlled classrooms. Do you believe that investments in these split system units would be a prudent use of taxpayer funds to immediately address the heating and air conditioning challenges of Baltimore City schools?
I think that you have to have a learning environment that you can learn in. I think you gave explanation earlier that was right on point, and so did the governor. These particular units actually have a longer lifespan than the one you're quoting. They are a ganged unit, and they are very effective. Ventilation is added on to these; it's a separate unit. Mm-hmm. So these will work in a lot of cases. Maybe not all, but they are a viable option.
Well, let me just say, Governor, in conclusion, that I will be obviously supportive of Baltimore City's efforts to make necessary and long overdue renovations. Mr. Gorell, you're doing a great job. Thank you for trying to move this process along. But in order to ensure that we're seeing the outcomes that are mutually anticipated by both the city and the state, it's crystal clear that some changes have to occur when it comes to the management of these taxpayer-funded investments in city schools' capital projects. I mean, talk about a subject which is difficult. Basic information is not available. But we certainly saw the embarrassment of inhumane conditions being advertised around the country recently. So we've got to do something. The failures of the city schools in managing state investments prudently are in the past now, I hope, and that's really beyond our control. But I suggest we move forward, figure out a plan to do right by these kids, teachers, and staff, and give them a safe and healthy learning environment using immediately equipment like this, which is readily available and applicable to both Baltimore City and Baltimore County schools that are suffering from these two problems. I want to reiterate what I said at the outset. All children regardless of their zip codes and socioeconomic status, are entitled to cool classrooms during the warmer months and warm classrooms in the cooler months, I will accept no excuse, none whatsoever, that our students cannot have both. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. I've got a few questions, but I'm going to turn it over to Madam Treasurer for any questions or comments.
I think that the concern about the city schools and the schools around the state is a shared one, shared not only by the members of the board, but by the IAC, the legislature, and the people of the state. I am still a little concerned, and I want you to tell me my concerns are no longer appropriate, Mr. Gorelz. The city schools, as you know, have a problem because their local government doesn't have the extra funds that other jurisdictions do to forward fund programs. So that if the IAC has partially funded a large number of projects, whether they're renovation projects or construction, and prices change, things alter on the ground, and you can't complete that project that year, the funds have until now not been able to be applied to other ongoing projects that year, although those projects might have been approved already. And so they have reverted to a contingency fund and had to wait for a year or 18 months before they could be used. I understand now that you're coming to us this morning with new news on that. Could you?
Madam Treasurer, and you prompted us to take a look, and we have taken a look. And we do believe that even within the first year that it's awarded, that clearly we statutorily have the authority to be able to rescind and reallocate within that year and not have to wait till the following fiscal year to award those dollars. We are already working with Baltimore City on a few projects that this is going to help them right now.
That's and the IAC as a whole understands and agrees with that. Is that? Yes. So that part of this problem will be dealt with, and we will be able to see more projects completed rather than a hiatus of a year or two, right?
Instead of 15 projects being rescinded, maybe we'll only have one or two projects rescinded if there's clear prioritization of the IAC of the city. That's important.
Everyone has to do his or her part. But that's a major problem that the law, in fact, a clear reading of the law would have prevented, but that was not the situation before. The $66 million, as I understand it, some people have said that the city school system is behind $66 million because of this problem. But, in fact, as I understand it, there were two problems. One is all the funds could not be used for the reason which you are now, the situation you're now correcting. And the other is that's a projection based on what the school system would have received if there were not funds in the contingency fund that had been used, that were there to be used. Regardless, that's a problem that ought to now disappear. Also, is that right?
Yes, and on the last point that you made, Madam Treasurer, the new funding, whenever we go and look at the entire state and look at Baltimore City in the context of the entire state funding, the funding to Baltimore City has tracked. There have been years that the state funding is higher and Baltimore City's funding is higher. The state when it's years when it's lower. When I look at the really what I call the stable years of FY15 through 18, where they are basically $280 million that go towards this type of project per year, and you look at the average across city schools, there's a zero average fluctuation between them. On the high of those 4 years, the high was 13% above the average of their average of those 4 years, and on the low it was 7%. But they average out to a zero deviation.
So if that was a problem, it's been...
Yes.
Solved, gone beyond it. And I will point out, I'm told, the not commission, the present commission on school construction, in fact, in discussions with the IAC, subsequent to those discussions, the IAC has now agreed that there will not be partial funding that essentially amounts to not completing projects.
Madam Chair, not exactly. Certainly, Baltimore City has made the request, and there is no partial funding. But we have other LEAs that want partial funding.
Multi-phase. That's not the question,
yes.
Is it?
Yes,
if
Madam Chair.
If it is at the request of the LEA, certainly
yes,
that would be appropriate. The bulk of the schools that have been found in poor condition in the city, are those being addressed, I am told, but I would like to hear from you, whether it's, you see it that way or not, through renovation or through the joint city-state LEA 21st century schools? Is that right, or is that not?
Madam Treasurer, I can't answer that question. A full assessment of their needs is something that's missing. I know that they are working on that. I think they've even started one themselves, and they've got another 4 years to go on the way that they're phasing their funding to do that. I can look at their capital improvement program and look at what they believe their priorities are, but for me to be able to professionally look at those schools and look at their deviation from what I would call sufficient, I can't comment.
Well, that's a situation in all the school districts.
Yes.
Right? That's why we're proposing a project to do an assessment of sufficiency across the state. But the question is, in terms of the schools that are already assessed as not only not superior, not good, not adequate, but actually in very poor shape, you can let us know which of those already have plans in place for either renovation or closure.
Yes.
In this joint, both in the state's program and in the joint city-state LEA program that the stadium authority is working on.
Yes, Madam Treasurer, we will take a look and at those maintenance scores that are not what we'd like for them to be. Look at those facilities, see how they rank against their own prioritization.
And finally, on the maintenance scores, the comptroller very correctly pointed out the proportion that were either superior or good. There also is a proportion that is adequate, which is it meets basic criteria. I don't know what that is. Could you let us know what the bottom line is for everything that is adequate and above? And that
yes.
way we can know what the proportion is that is less than adequate.
Yes, we will do that.
Thanks very much.
I have one other. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to complete the public record because I put a lot in about the resistance of the school bureaucracy up there to do what I believe they should have been doing for the last 6 years. And just for the edification of the folks that are out there in the real world, I have been bringing this subject up almost as long as I've been comptroller. So it's the foot dragging of the bureaucrats, but it's also the foot dragging of the politicians. In 2016, I just want to put in for the record, the General Assembly, House of Delegates and the State Senate, inserted language in the capital budget, one of our most important legislative actions, in a highly irregular way, I contended at that point, and troubling. But they chose to insert in 2016 in the capital budget specific language that barred school systems in the state of Maryland from using state funding for units such as this one in front of me. I mean, it was an unprecedented deus ex machina language that arrived out of nowhere and banned this kind of equipment. In addition, they weren't happy just with that. General Assembly asserted language in the capital budget last year to eliminate the role of the Board of Public Works in reviewing the statewide capital improvement program recommended by the IAC. They didn't like the advocacy for cool classrooms during sweltering days and warm classrooms during freezing days. So, for the record, it's not just bureaucratic resistance. It is political resistance. And if I could just, and I'm through with this subject, I just wanted to thank the employees of the Thomas Somerville Company for not forcing me to buy this equipment, but just letting me borrow it. Chris Squires is a technical specialist. Roslyn McKell is a sales rep specializing in these units. Ray McKell is the vice president of the company. Jesse Taylor is the sales manager. The cost of this product in front of me is approximately $3,000 for a unit that will heat, cool, and ventilate a 28-foot by 28-foot classroom. They're in operation in other jurisdictions in the state. They work beautifully. They last a long time. You can plug them into existing electricity. Unbelievable, efficient technological projects. They're not just this company and these products. There are 10 or 12 other companies that make these products. And so I think the solution, hopefully, is there, and I hope the city and Baltimore County also, which has a very acute problem that we'll get to in just a minute, I think, in this area. Once again, these two jurisdictions are all by themselves in the state suffering from this problem, and it is a result of bureaucratic and political resistance. So I want to thank the governor for indulging me to correct the record on this, and feel free to come up afterwards and examine this equipment.
Mr. Gorrell, we've seen from correspondence from you and your predecessor documentation of Baltimore City Schools' deficiencies in managing these state capital investments, and this seems to have been a conversation that the IAC has been having with the city for years, if not decades even. Certainly long before your arrival. But in your opinion, what needs to happen in order for the city schools to fix these planning and management issues?
Well, as I said earlier, Governor, I think that having a very high-level, extremely experienced individual that is a point of contact that is responsible for maintenance, responsible for planning, responsible for construction, responsible for the financing that's required and the capability to and level of funding that is available, and to be able to map out not only what we're doing today, but how we're going to sustain facilities 20 years into the future. Somebody's looking at the whole cost of ownership so that every move we make is making it better and more affordable and sustainable into the future. I think a few of the counties have people like that. And I think, as I said earlier, Baltimore City, having the enormous problem that they have, and I certainly want to recognize that they have a very heavy lift, that's the level of expertise and knowledge that they need in leadership to be able to help manage and create a plan, a strategic plan, and move it forward.
In spite of receiving more state funding, two or three times more than anyone else, and being the fourth highest funded school system in America, they don't seem to be prioritizing maintenance, because they slashed their maintenance budget by 27%. And there was one report of them cutting up to 34 positions. I mean, it doesn't – most people have this as a priority. It's something that seems like it should be, and for them it doesn't appear to be.
Governor, I think that they are struggling with their funding that they think is important to apply to their schools. It looks like that they are increasing some of their maintenance FTE, but the overall budget is not increasing as we would like. I certainly can look back 10 years, and their maintenance budget appears to be bigger than it is today, and yet we have even new facilities coming online. So there has to be a reckoning, as I was describing, of how that we not only build today, how are we going to keep it and have it there 20 years from now?
You know, I understand that the city has a little over $2.7 million in its contingency account. And would it be possible for them to tap into those funds to address the crisis of the HVAC systems that just recently failed with the cold weather? Or can that money be applied to other projects that are, you know, not being funded by them?
Are we zero currently?
Yes.
As of the end of the year, their contingency fund is now at zero.
Okay.
So if there are some reverted funds to projects that have already been brought forward and are on the list, yes, they can move forward.
Before you go, I just want to note item 19, the final approval of the local cost share percentages for state school construction aid. I want to thank my colleagues, Comptroller Francho and Treasurer Kopp, for agreeing with my proposal back in October to hold the city, Palmer City, and other local school systems harmless from the legislative formula-driven cuts that would have happened to state school construction aid. So thank you both for that. Any other questions on the schools? I know we have a couple of speakers. Is there anything else you want to add before we call up?
Mr. Governor, members, no, I don't.
Thank you.
Governor, can I ask Mr. Grell, not this moment, but at some appropriate time in the future, I think it would be interesting for the board to hear a progress report on the joint city-state LEA project, the 21st century schools, exactly how some of these issues are being addressed. I know I should not ask for something that I don't know the answer to, but I do that very frequently, and this is one of those. But just how we're doing on that and how that's going to address some of the concerns that that have been raised here, including we keep using the cost per student number here, which is an appropriate number to use, but then we say this school system is funded more highly than another or than many others. In a situation
all
in
but
which,
three
yes,
in America.
Yes, in a situation in which one of the basic problems is declining enrollment and the number of schools that we have. And there is no doubt that the schools play a role in a community that is more than simply educational. But the basic purpose is educational. It is a school building. And if students can be better educated by combining schools and creating a new facility or a significantly enhanced facility, it's something that every jurisdiction has got to look at. But the decline is obviously much more serious in Baltimore City, and that leads to some of these numbers. And it ought to be, I believe, addressed fully. I know the school system is addressing it, and I know it's very difficult for a community, but I believe it's a basic cause for some of these numbers to look out of sync with the rest of the state.
Treasurer, we're wrapping up an annual report on the 21st Century School Program. So whenever that is complete, certainly work with the Secretary and see if there's a time that we could use that as an opportunity and maybe prepare some metrics that we could review to discuss some of those.
And let me just say, our schools many years ago in Montgomery County went through boundary changes, mm-hmm. went through school closures, and it was very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the counties have. And the question is, because of all of the problems of the city and its neighborhoods and its needs, are there things that we can do to help facilitate that perhaps had not been needed in some other jurisdictions or at other points
yes.
in time to help
yes.
this move along?
Yes, I think we can provide information. For instance, a square footage of school in order to properly sustain it in the future really costs about $8 a square foot, whether there's a child using it or not. So to be able to get that kind of calculus in front of the parents so they understand that those dollars could be used more appropriately, if we do this. And there are options of right-sizing schools to make everything better.
And there is difficulty moving
yes.
across communities to go from one school instead of another.
Yes.
To address that openly.
Yes.
Thank you. We have a couple of speakers. Thank you, Dr. Correll. We've been talking mostly about Baltimore City, we have from Caroline County, we have Larry Porter, the president of the County Commissioners, and Dr. Patricia Salins, the superintendent of schools.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to thank you for this opportunity to stand before you today. Mr. Porter and myself, I know that we have had an opportunity prior to this to speak with you as it relates to building a new facility in Greensboro Elementary School in our district in Caroline County. We are moving forward to try to get approval for planning and have not been able to do that successfully. So I think that I've had a good opportunity to articulate to you the relationship that we do have with our commissioners. And the support that we have of our board and our community, but I felt that it was appropriate for our president of our commissioners to come and share his viewpoint because I think that he has some very valid points to share with you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to come across the bridge. It was a little slow this morning getting here, but we always enjoy coming. In October of this year, we made the political decision to increase our income tax to the maximum to raise money for, to support this school. I've never been accused of being the greatest politician in the world, and probably from a timing standpoint, was not good. I got called things on social media I hadn't even heard of before and had to go back and look them up. But, I do things that I think are the right thing to do and not, from a political standpoint. So, our Board of Education stood shoulder to shoulder with us. They took the heat the same way we did. But it's important because I've lived in the county, was born in the county, lived there my whole life, and this is a big deal for us. This is not an auxiliary project. This is probably the biggest thing we're going to do. And I certainly wouldn't stand up here and pretend to know what it's like to have to make the decisions that you all make, and I appreciate the tremendous work that you do and that you've done, but I know what it's like to sit in one of those three commissioner seats in Caroline County and try to make decisions that I think are in the best interests of our students and our citizens. We've made a tremendous effort, and I think the statistics that the comptroller had cited a few minutes ago show that we've made an effort, more than a good effort, I think, to maintain our schools. You've been there to give us our Silver Hammer Awards, and our names are on the beam in Preston, which I still think about. But just here to show you the support that we have with our Board of Education, and thank you again for the opportunity. Comptroller, we'll see you Monday, I think, in Caroline County.
Well, I didn't know that, but you've got one of the best-run counties in the state.
Thank you.
I enjoy coming over there. These units obviously are not something that you're seeing for the first time.
We've seen them before.
As far as I'm concerned, there are no outstanding issues with your project, and I'm happy to be supportive should it in May ultimately be on the whole list.
I'd like to extend an invitation if you are coming to our district. So on Monday, if we can arrange for you to go to Greensboro Elementary School so you can see it, we would love to have you. So please let us know, and we'll do everything we can to open that for you to come and see.
Thank you.
We know you're going to Towers Concrete, and you can help mix some concrete while you're there. But we would love to have you come. Governor, Madam Treasurer, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to come over.
We'll be back to see you in the summer, too.
Could I ask Mr. Gorell the question about this? Since he's still standing back there behind the
commission. Don't go anywhere.
My understanding is that you have been, my recollection of our discussion is that you have been reluctant to authorize new planning at this stage because of the number of projects that are backlogged on construction.
As I look from the October 18 meeting, the LEAs gave us estimates of what they thought their deferred maintenance backlog was, and it totals about $26 billion for the state. So it's a very large number. So I am reluctant to just jump off with recommending planning projects until we understand how they fit into the statewide educational priority, which is, as I read the COMAR, the top thing on the list.
Yes, I recall you saying that. But also that by May, you will look more fully at the funding available, including planning projects.
That's correct. And traditionally, at this point, at the 75% point, planning is not something that is awarded. We want to look at the funding commitment, how much is left, project the anticipated flow into the future so that any commitments the state makes in planning will be able to support in the construction dollars later on. So it normally does occur in May. There are a few that you see that we have, a couple of them that are kindergarten spaces. They're on existing facilities. There's one in Hagerston that has been discussed for years that is finally on the list as a planning approval today, but it was very limited.
But a project like this that is a top priority of the counties, you would expect to see in May rather than right now?
That's whenever we will bring those recommendations, yes, to the IC. Yes.
I think there's unanimous support on the Board of Public Works. Far be it from us to try to interfere with the great work of the IAC, but we would love to see Greensboro Elementary move forward, and we hope you'll consider it in the decision making. You know, in May when you look at the remaining 25%. So we want to thank the president and the superintendent for joining us and for making a commitment to this project.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions on school construction?
Yes. Where did Mr. Grell go?
He thought he was off the hook. He's standing in the back. Mr. Grell, you're not off the hook yet, apparently. I thought the comptroller had worn out.
Right. But... Okay. Just to finish up this issue of climate control, there are currently, as I speak, 13,781 students in Baltimore County. We're not talking Baltimore City. We're talking one of the most affluent counties in the state. 13,781 students as I speak, 910 teachers, their faculty, in 533 classrooms in Baltimore County in 15 schools that have no air conditioning. So two of those were the subject of the October hearing, where a number of parents, teachers, and students from Baltimore County came down to complain that they were not being, or their problems at Lansdowne High School and Delaney High School were not being listened to. I have and will continue to be a strong supporter for replacement of these two high schools because they, quite frankly, have deplorable conditions for their students and faculty. And I bring this up, once again, to isolate this issue of climate control. It is not a system-wide, statewide problem. Obviously, there are maintenance concerns all over the state. But this specific issue of overheated, lack of air circulation, unsafe classrooms, specific to Baltimore City and Baltimore County. I share the frustration and anger by parents, students, and teachers. And once again, it is the reason we have this problem is simply because of bureaucratic resistance and political resistance. It has nothing to do with money. Zero. Goose egg. Nothing to do with resources. It has to do with political and bureaucratic inertia. So, anyway, I hope that along with Baltimore City, we will see, perhaps, Mr. Grell, you could communicate to Baltimore County also, that all kids, regardless of whether they where they live or the socioeconomic status of their communities, deserve safe and comfortable learning environments. And frankly, they're not getting them, or at least these 13,781 are not getting it. Replacement schools are being built or have been built in other parts of the country, county, up in Baltimore County, but the leaders in Towson, for reasons that will continue to remain a mystery to all of us, have elected to deny this community the replacement school that they're long that's long owed to them. So I was very disappointed to see that Delaney High School, which is listed by the county as number 26 on their priority list. For those of you that are not familiar with school funding, when you're number 26, well, don't go out and buy any champagne. Let's put it that way. And was listed in the C category or deferred, thereby resulting in even greater delays for the long overdue replacement project of Delaney High School. So it is the failure of Baltimore County government to replace Delaney High School, which is quite, if you go up there, quite literally falling apart. And so anyway, it's in close conjunction to the $43 million tax break for developers of the Towson Row project, kind of strikes me as perhaps a timing issue. So I'm sorry to see that Delaney is number 26 on the capital project priority list. Near the bottom of the list, I believe that's a slap in the face, a deliberate slap in the face to the parents, teachers, and students who have pleaded for years with elected officials to get this done. And if that wasn't enough, the fact that Baltimore County Public Schools failed to submit the necessary documentation for this project to move forward with limited planning funds is also an incredible insult to the Delaney High community. Can you explain why Delaney High School, Mr. Gorell, is listed as a C-minus by the IAC?
About planning, feasibility. Feasibility and planning are not complete. There are two requirements to ensure that the project, if it's considered, is close to being ready to move so that the dollars, if they were awarded, don't sit on a shelf and not work for us.
Okay, well, it's incredibly disappointing to me that Baltimore County Schools' sloppy work in not putting the feasibility report in will result in yet another delay for Delaney High School. And let me conclude, Colgate Elementary and Berkshire Elementary were also given C-minus on Baltimore County, apparently also due to the county's failure to properly submit required documentation. Is that also meet with somebody's... Okay, well, I'm bringing up
I'm going to bring up the technical experts on that, please. Kim Spivey.
Good morning. Berkshire was due to Design Progress also. And what was the other name?
It's Colgate Elementary and Berkshire Elementary were both got C-minus listed, and I believe the reason is the county's failure to properly submit required documentations on time. What's the problem?
That is correct. It is the design progress. That submission goes to Maryland State Department of Education, and it's a requirement for planning approval.
Okay. Well, these two schools are currently non-air-conditioned. The leadership of the county is not doing, I guess, what it should do to make these eligible for moving up the ladder. And because of that sloppiness, these two projects are delayed. I can't see how the county will be able to meet their promise that these will be air conditioned by 2021. And I would hate to certainly have my kids be in a school in 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021 with no air conditioning. The point is, instead of rolling the dice and hoping that all of Baltimore County's replacement projects are recommended for funding, obviously that won't happen, the county should do the humane thing, which is immediately install these air conditioning units in the hundreds of classrooms that currently are un-air-conditioned. So we've got 533 classrooms in Baltimore County, one of the richest counties in the state. We've got a unit that's cost $3,000 and declining. If you bought 500 of them, I bet you'd get a real deal, and they could be put in within a matter of, well, let's be generous. 2 months? A month? 2 months. Let's pick 2 months, just to be reasonable. And someone can figure out the dollar amounts, but it's not very much. But it is a tremendous relief to those 13,000 kids. If you could, are you with the county or are you with the IAC?
I'm with the IAC.
Okay. Well, if you anyone's in doubt, anybody from the county's here, are they? They walked out last time they were here. But if anybody sees them, you might suggest to them that, or take a cell phone photo of this, if you would, just a snapshot, and maybe text it up to them. Thank you.
Yeah, last two comments from me, and then we'll, I think, let you go, Mr. Gorrell. In FY18, Baltimore City allocated only 5% of its capital budget for schools. Their budget, their operating budget, only 10% for schools. And the average in the other jurisdictions is like 50% of their budget. I think Prince George's spends maybe 60%. So we've had to overfund them from the state level, but the city needs to, you know, take funding schools pretty seriously as well. They spend $1,600 per student in administrative costs, which is the highest in America. And yet they slash their maintenance budget by $5 million and by 27%. So those are issues we probably should address at a later date. But thank you very much. I don't think there's any other questions on.
But I see Senator Kagan just walked in, one of my favorite state senators from Montgomery County. And
I don't know what she came in for.
Maybe she came in to say nice things about Amazon.
Senator, great to see you. Thank you. Are there any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Yeah, I had a question on the appendix.
Yes, the emergency reports of contracts from the public safety.
Actually, the Secretary Churchill again. This here more emergency boiler leaking water projects. That's in this case in corrections. But it goes back to the question that you and I discussed and I've asked before about how we have a handle, how we can get a handle on the adequacy of the maintenance of these sorts of essential parts of our state buildings, the boilers, the chillers, the water lines, so that we can prevent the emergencies. And it's just, I told you I would point out a couple. They come up at every meeting, and I understand that it's difficult because you have to have the user agency know it, and then you have to have the control agency, DGS, know it, and then address it. But there's got to be a way, because this is not only poor management, but it's costly. Costly both in terms of human suffering, but just in terms of dollars. So I look forward to, I know it's something, a concern you share. I look forward to seeing how we can address it.
Yes, how we manage our facilities is something that we look at on a daily basis. And in the case of general services, we do a fair amount of inspection and are trying to put in plans for how we will deal with our facilities in the future. But what we've also learned, especially through this last cold spell, is that we need to talk with we're talking with our other agencies. Facilities departments within agencies are talking together so that we can share information and put forth best practices. So we have a lot to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I know we've discussed, Governor, you know, the Treasurer's Office houses the insurance of the state. This is not a cost-free item. The more problems we have due to either maintenance or old systems that are just old and we patched them up over the years or decades, the more reluctant the insurance companies are to cover it, and the more expensive it is. So if there were a way of getting a handle on, A, what the situation is regarding the adequacy of these systems, and, B, how we can address it and cost out in the future what it would cost, we can also see in the future what the financial gain would be addressing them as opposed to going back and patching it up. And I dare say if you go back and look at the agendas of the Board of Public Works in forever in the past, you will see these same emergency items for basic, essential systems in our buildings, not to mention the roof and the mold and all of the other sorts of problems.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? Is there a motion? Second. 3-0. Now we're going to move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Morning, Governor.
Terry Belton, that's quite a new look you got on there.
We're kind of sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Looks like a natural resources guy.
Yes, sir. I was asked.
My climate change adaptation measure.
Yeah. Like you've been out in the parks, maybe.
Yes, sir. Governor, Mr. Comptroller, and Madam Treasurer, for the record, I am Secretary Belton, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 10 items on our real property agenda for your approval this morning.
Any questions on DNR?
I would second that, but I just want to say our new Delegate Quarterman,
yes,
who is hard at work, is very strongly in support of item 6A, the open space in Washington County, and asked me to point that out.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate the delegates' support.
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on DNR. Next up is the EVM agenda.
Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, for the record, Mark McCold, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Budget Management. The department has submitted 5 items for today's agenda. We have speakers here ready to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions on EVM? Motion.
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Now, there are no submissions from the university system. They're off the hook today.
They're coming back next week.
Next week. Next week. Next time. We'll see them next time. So we're going to move on to information technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, the Acting Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have 2 items on the agenda, one of which is a revised hand-carried item. And there are people here from the various agencies to answer any questions you may have.
Questions on do it? Motion?
Move approval.
3-0.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to the Department of Transportation. Mr. Ports?
Yes. Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Dr. Governor.
Well, I also got an honorary 9th-degree black belt, so it's Grandmaster. It's Grandmaster Dr.
Governor. Dr. Grandmaster Governor. For the record, my name is Jim Ports. I'm Deputy Secretary for Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 25 items today. At this time, 25 RP is being withdrawn. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ports. Before I get to my question on item 1, I just want to give you and Secretary Ron and our SHA Administrator, Greg Slater, a shout-out for another great job keeping our state roads clear and safe during the last snowstorm. Thank you very much. We should give them a round of applause. Yeah. Item 1 is a request from the Maryland Transportation Authority for $30 million in increased contract authority for architecture and engineering services for the Harry Nice Bridge replacement project. And I just wanted to say that after decades of delay by the state, we pushed hard to get this project moving, and we are supporting it with $765 million in funding, and finally, we're going to make this much-needed bridge replacement a reality. Mm-hmm. We want to thank you for your efforts there. Are there any questions on the transportation agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
There we go. Nice work. Now we're going to move on to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. department has 34 items on our agenda today, including two supplementals, and we have personnel available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Secretary Churchill. I'd like to address item 34. This is a request to grant $73.8 million to the University of Maryland Medical System for construction of the new Prince George's Regional Medical Center in Prince George's County. This funding represents capital budget appropriations dating from FY 2014 to FY 2018. We've been supporting and pushing for funding this project from day one. We've already committed $200 million to the project, including another $19 million in this year's capital budget. But my understanding is that none of this money has been spent yet, and I'm happy to support this request. And when they reach the point where they do need it, we'll certainly look forward to discussing further rounds of funding allocations.
Good morning. May it please the board. My name is Dana Dembro, Director of Procurement for the Department of Health. We have four individuals more knowledgeable about this particular project, led by Mark Wasserman, who is
I saw Mr. Wasserman come in.
He's the Senior Vice President for External Affairs for the University of Maryland Medical System. I'll defer to him if there are any particular questions.
I don't have a question. I was just pointing out that anybody got questions of, since the distinguished gentleman came all the way down here.
Yes.
We should think of some tough questions.
Thank you,
Mr. Wasserman, for joining us. Thank you.
Governor, Mr.
The comptroller said it must be a big deal if he came down. So.
You are our partner, sir. The state is our partner. Shall I just make some comments?
Or? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I'm happy to extrapolate here. First of all, I would ask all of you to sort of keep in perspective what it is we're doing here, which is we're making a leap forward. I'm here with my colleague, Darrell Mealy, who's actually building this facility. We're doing something that people have been struggling to resolve for. My brother was born there in 1962. And people have been struggling for 35 or 40 years to figure out the answer here. We have zigged and zagged on this opportunity in my experience for at least 25 years. We found the magic formula here, which is a three-way partnership with the University of Maryland Medical System, bringing our brand, bringing academic medicine, creating the opportunity to transform healthcare in Prince George's County. The county government, state government, OMS. And what is our goal? To transform healthcare? What, that's your goal, but your goal is also to remove yourself from the ongoing commitments to have to fund a hospital. We have made enormous progress. We broke ground. Thank you for coming. And we're right on the 10-yard line here. If I could just, I'm going to just keep going here, and I'll get to your point.
You're on a roll, so.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
It was going to pass, though.
Should I leave?
You know, when you've made the sales, they say you to stop talking.
All right, so I'd be happy to provide you with an update on where we are. We're making progress. I think the issue here, which you have raised, the governor, is the state has been an excellent partner. OMS has gone out and borrowed its share. It's in hand. Half of the county share is in hand, and the other half will be in hand before the end of this calendar year. What we're looking for is certainty about completion of the state commitment. It's not in doubt. It's a matter of how it's paid out, and we would hope that wise heads here in Annapolis would figure out how to complete that. So that we're going to get on. This thing is under construction. We've awarded the largest construction management contract we've ever awarded to Clark Construction. So we just ask for your support to finish this out.
Well, thank you. I'm a lifelong Prince Georgian and grew up there, and I can tell you I've seen the mess in the hospital system there forever. My dad was county executive in the late 70s and early 80s, and we were dealing with problems with Prince George's Hospital then, and this is just going to be transformational for the area. It's going to be a beautiful facility, and it's going to make so much of a difference. So we appreciate the effort.
There's no doubt. And we hope to bring a little bit of magic to Laurel and to Bowie and to really create a system that...
We need magic there, too.
Pardon me?
We need magic there as well.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on the DGS agenda?
Yeah, Governor, item 33, which is the SHA lease, it was brought at the last minute, so it's not on the web. But
item 33, we have Wendy Napier, Assistant Secretary for Real Estate here, and, of course, we also have Deputy Ports. I can speak to issues.
Just to say, we've received a letter from the chairman of the Budget and Tax Committee and the Appropriations Committee asking for a deferral because it deals with planning for a very large project, which the legislature has not been able to see yet, although it's on their agenda the first week in February, which is the week after next. I understand that there are some who think there's no role for the legislature in this sort of issue, but there is $22 million in the budget that will that has been submitted and will have to be approved. So my question is, A, what is the harm of a deferral until after that first week in February? Or B, if we go ahead, because you can cancel it for the state can cancel the contract, obviously, if there's a problem, what the cost of doing that would be?
So the need to go ahead today involves the six-week construction timeline to get the space ready. So if we are not able to approve it today, that would delay the start of the construction. The program wanted to be in the space around March 1st. So the landlord will not begin construction until we have an approved lease. So that was the desire to move forward today, was to allow that six-week window to be ready for the space to be available on March 1st. We do have termination for convenience in the language in the lease. If for some reason we would need to pull this back, the state would be on the hook for the construction work that occurs between now and if a decision would be made to pull this back.
So if this were deferred until following the first week in February, which I assume is the meeting after next.
February 7th.
So it would probably be the meeting after next. You anticipate work will have been done by then?
Well, if you were to defer the item today, work would not begin until an approval.
No, if it were not deferred today, would work have been done by then?
Yes, they will.
So if you at that point were to terminate, it would be at a cost?
Yes, we would be liable for the construction work completed between now and that time period. The work won't begin until after the meeting today, only if the lease is approved.
And is there a ballpark estimate of what that cost would be?
The total construction cost is $250,000 for the space. This is about a 31,000-square-foot space, and that's the cost to get the space ready for the new program. How much of that they would – they anticipate having it completed by March 1st, roughly. Right.
So it would be close to the total cost. All right. Well, I must say, Governor, I do disagree with your attorney that there's no role for the legislature in this since they do approve of the budget.
Well, you know, I think we'll have maybe Secretary Ports address this one directly, but I don't believe the legislature has any role whatsoever in leases, and certainly they can talk about budget items later, but I'm going to let Mr. Ports talk about
the $22 million.
Sure. So, first of all, I'll try and answer the question, what is the harm? So, as you know, this is when Governor Hogan announced the $9 billion project for I-495 and I-270, as well as the potential I-295. We attracted 27 developers from all over the globe. And so one is the harm that it would cause for all those developers to say, yeah, we asked you to get ready, we asked you to do the one-on-ones, but we're just not sure what the legislature is going to do. So it sends a chilling effect throughout the rest of the world for probably the largest highway project actually in the known universe, I heard the other day from the governor. The
But, you know, I kept saying it was the largest in North America. And then the transportation secretary corrected me and said, actually, it's the largest in the world. So I stepped it up and said it in the known universe. But somebody, somewhere, sure. another galaxy may have a bigger interest.
I'm sticking with you because I'm not correcting you. I'm not going to do that. The other harm is Amazon is in play right now for Montgomery County, and they need a lot of infrastructure enhancements in this geographical metropolitan area. And I think it would send a chilling effect to Amazon. I think it sends a chilling effect to the citizens of Montgomery and Prince George's County who have to sit in congestion every day and would probably like some of those high-paying Amazon jobs. And I think it also sends a message that you know, Maryland's not ready to have congestion relief and help the environment by not having idling cars sitting around the beltways all day long.
And all this because of 4 weeks of allowing the legislative branch of government to look at it.
Then that gets us to the other side of the question.
It may cost us 50,000 jobs. Well, because I can tell you that one of the big reasons why Amazon is considering it is because of the improvements to 495, 270, and 295 that we're talking about.
Correct.
And I can't imagine anyone
in the legislature that would want to vote against this project. They probably wouldn't be in the legislature very long after that.
That's
so to address the other side about the legislature, because I know that's a concern also, but, you know, the legislature created the P3 process, I believe, back in 2011, and it began in 2012. We are literally following the same process as the Purple Line. The Purple Line had planning started up in 2012. It was not even in the CTP until 2014, and it wasn't even approved until Governor Hogan approved it in 2015. So the planning was well ahead, and we need these resources because we have to have people in place that can do the financing and the procurements and the tolling and the taxing and all these things. Matter of fact, we had a long discussion about lack of planning earlier today with regard to air conditioning and how devastating that is. We need to get this stuff in place so that SHA can do the RFQ and perform our due diligence, prepare the project to come to the BPW to get P3 designation approval. So we need all this, all these folks in line. Also, to address the
keep in mind that this is not a budget request. This is attracting $7.6 billion in private funding to do 270 and 495. We're not talking about expending state money.
And you're also making another great point, Governor, because actually, the way that we had done this, the legislature technically already approved these funds because we have combined the project from the Tier 1 NEPA project for the I-495 and the I-270 projects with this transportation relief project, which you call the TRP. And so this has already been in $800,000 has already been in the CTP and approved by the legislature. So we're not going to use hardly any of this money to move this project forward. You know, this is probably one of the most important projects that the Transportation Department has taken on. When Pete Ryan, through the governor's direction, started the I-270 project for the $100 million for the best and brightest people to come in, and change the way we move people. We were criticized, as I went around the CTPs throughout the state, on, well, that's a short-term fix. That's a short-term fix. Well, here's a long-term fix. And a year and a half later, that Governor Hogan announced. And we need to get this thing moving. I think any delay would send a chilling effect, as I mentioned. The legislature has technically already approved the funds. There's no reason to delay this one.
Yeah, I agree.
What you say makes a lot of sense, I think. On the other hand, if this is the largest project in the universe...
No universe.
And of such such importance to the growth of the state and the health of the state, I do find it ironic that anyone would suggest that the legislative branch of government has no role in it going into the future. And I'm sure, in fact, that that's not so, and there will be a strong role for the legislature.
I think the answer was that they don't have any role in leasing space. It's not about whether they have a role in
transportation. Yes, but now that we realize that this is essential to the transportation of the known universe, I do understand, however, that they will be looking at it.
I'm sure.
We'll be looking at it in 2 weeks, and we do have the legal capacity. If there are problems, if there are questions, to have those problems and questions answered, which I assume that they will be, Mr. Secretary.
Sure.
And then to come to a conclusion whether to withhold funding for this lease. So
I don't think they have any ability to withhold funding from the lease. The money's already there. We're not asking for funding.
Yeah.
So that's ridiculous.
The $22 million is at stake in our economic development efforts. And that the cost would be the foregone, the cost that has been put into the project already. So we have an estimate of what it would be. I understand that this is going to go forward, and I understand that this may, in fact, be essential to the next steps.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the involvement of all of the branches of government is a normal and wise process.
Mm-hmm.
The comptroller
was the chairman of the judicial branch. That's absolutely right.
And anything we can do to prevent that sort of problem, to offer opportunities for public participation and understanding of this project as it goes forward, this really could be the most significant project that we've had for decades in the past, or will have decades in the future.
And
I think it would be much stronger with participation of all of the relevant parties.
Just so you know, the county executive and the unanimous Montgomery County delegation supports this whole effort. So,
well, as I mentioned, and I agree with you, Madam Treasurer, everybody has a role. But as I mentioned, we're following the same process as we did for the Purple Line, which was the largest transit project in the United States.
And the legislature did not have to vote on the lease.
And we did not. Yeah, we didn't. The legislature did not voice any opinion on that. I haven't seen the letter from that. And two, the legislature does have a role, and I would suspect that it would be highly unusual for them to do a line item veto of our CTP for one project. It would be highly unusual.
And extremely damaging.
And precedent setting.
But it could be done.
Yep.
But they could. But they could.
Thank you. Any other questions on the DGS agenda? Is there a motion?
Approval.
Second.
I would like to abstain on that item.
Okay.
Abstention on 33LT.
Yeah. Not because I don't.
We separate that out. Great. I believe that concludes our Board of Public Works for today. Thank you very much for joining us.